The Jews turned Jesus into Pilate. And if you read the story, Pilate thinks he's judging Jesus. The truth here is that Jesus is judging Pilate. Jesus is strong. It's not him on trial. It's Pilate on trial. Reminds me of the redneck who went to Paris and was visiting the famous Louvre Museum. Of course, he called it the Love Museum. And so he gets there, and he gets to the Mona Lisa, the incredible painting. And this dude is critiquing the painting of why it's not done very well. Beside him is a famous artist, and the artist finally says to him, "Sir, you don't recognize this painting is not on trial. You're on trial. Your tastes are on trial." And when Pilate comes and Jesus comes before him, you'll get the idea that Pilate thinks he's got the power. Oh, no, no. Jesus has the power. And what Pilate does with Jesus is what is on trial. So this morning, we're going to go back and we're going to read again from all the Gospels put together. We call this the harmony of the Gospels. So you'll have to watch on the screen today and help me as we answer this question. What did Pilate do with Jesus? What did he do with Jesus? And we're going to see six attempts that Pilate tries to get out from underneath this. He does not want to be here. So let's go and let's start reading together. It is quite a story. "And when they had bound Jesus, the whole multitude of them arose and led him away from Caiaphas," that's the high priest, "to the Praetorium," that's the house of Rome. "And they delivered Jesus to Pontius Pilate, the governor. It was early morning, but they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover." Now, this is something really going to strike you reading the story. These dudes are meticulous in keeping their law. What's the issue here? You couldn't take the Passover if you had walked into a Gentile's house. So they're meticulous in keeping their laws, and yet they don't think a thing about lying and crucifying the Son of God. What a mess. "Pilate then went out to them and said, 'What accusation do you bring against this man?' They answered and said to him," smart aleck, "'If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you.' Then Pilate said, 'Okay, you take him and judge him according to your law.' Therefore the Jews said to him, 'It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death,' that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled when he spoke, signifying the death he would die." The only people who did crucifixions were Romans. In fact, this is what's so ironic. The Jews hated it. And they began to accuse Jesus, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding people to pay taxes to Caesar." Lie. "Saying that he himself is Christ the King." Truth. Then Pilate entered the Praetorium again, called Jesus, and said, "Are you the King of the Jews?" See, they're trying to make them think, Pilate think, that Jesus is there to overthrow the Romans. Jesus stood before the governor and answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus tries to say, "I'm not a threat. My kingdom's not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I would not be delivered to the Jews. But my kingdom's not from here. I'm not a threat." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "It is rightly as you say that I'm a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I've come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who's of the truth hears my voice." Jesus mentions truth, and Pilate goes cynical. Sounds like Pilate is in America 2024. Pilate said to him, "What is truth? Come on, man, get over it. There's no such thing as truth." And when he said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to the chief priests and the crowd, he's going to say this over and over, "I find no fault in this man at all." So number one, what's the first thing he does to try not to deal with Jesus? He just tries to avoid the issue. He says, guys, this is not my jurisdiction. You guys take him and try him. I don't want to have to deal with this. And of course, they won't let it happen. So then it just continues. Look at our second reading. He tries another track. When Pilate heard of Galilee, in other words, he hears that Jesus is from Galilee. He asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. His second try to get rid of Jesus is to shift responsibility. Now understand this. This is not the Herod the Great who killed all the babies when Jesus was born. This is one of his sons. And when Herod the Great died, they divided up all of the land. And this Herod is over Galilee. So Pilate hears Galilee, light bulb goes on his brain. Let me do this. I'm going to shift the responsibility. I'm going to give this over to Herod. Now, Herod is somewhat a Jew who is completely begin to cooperate with the Romans. Now, if you read the story, Herod's quite excited about this because he's heard a lot about Jesus' miracles. So he's like, bring him on. I want to see a big show, man. Jesus, do something. We're not going to read this, but when Jesus gets to Herod, he says not a word. Herod doesn't get a show. Frustratedly, he sends him back to Pilate. Now take up here. Now Pilate tries again. Quite a move, he tries to not have to deal with Jesus. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to releasing to the multitude one prisoner. In other words, on the Passover, just trying to make the Jews feel better, every year they had released some Jewish prisoner. So he decides to try that. And it could be whomever they requested. At that time, they had a notorious prisoner, a robber named Barabbas, who was chained with his fellow rebels. They had committed murder in a certain rebellion in the city. Guys, this dude did exactly what they're accusing Jesus of doing, of insurrection against the Romans. He's a murderer. Therefore, when they had gathered together, the multitude, crying aloud, began to ask him to do just as he'd always done for them. But Pilate answered them, saying, you have a custom that I should release someone to you at Passover. Who do you want me to release to you? Barabbas or Jesus, who's called the Christ? Do you want me to release the King of the Jews? For he knew the chief priests had handed him over because of their envy. Now, Pilate's smart enough to know the reason Jesus is standing in front of him is not because he's done anything wrong. They are just jealous because the people are following him. Now, something really weird happens here. While he's sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, have nothing to do with this man, for I've suffered many things in a dream because of him. So Pilate's wife has a dream, and she warns her husband, you don't want to be a part of this. Now, I do believe that God works through dreams and visions. We hear lots of those from the Muslim world right now, of people who come to Christ because they first saw him in a dream. And so this happens. Then Pilate, when he called together the chief priests, the rulers, the people, said to them, you've brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, here he goes again, I found no fault in this man concerning the things which you accused him of. No, neither did Herod. For I sent him back to him, and indeed nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. But the chief priest and the Pharisees and elders stirred up the crowd so that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. You see what's going on here? Pilate thinks there is no way they're going to pick Barabbas to be released over Jesus. I mean, you might not like Jesus. You might think he's a religious heretic, but he's not a murderer. They didn't know how bad these guys were. Which of the two do you want me to release to you? And they cried out at once, away with this man, Jesus. Release to us Barabbas. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, wishing to release Jesus, answered and called out and said to them, "What do you want me to do with Jesus who called the Christ, whom you call the King of the Jews?" But they all shouted and cried out, saying to him, "Let him be crucified, crucify him, crucify him." He said to them a third time, "Why?" This makes no sense. "What evil has he done? I found no reason for death in him. I'll therefore chastise him and let him go." Okay, ploy number three. He tries to change the subject. He says, "You guys are all fired up about this Jesus. Let's change this topic and let's look at Barabbas." Now, in some ancient Greek texts, it's fascinating because it gives Barabbas his name as Jesus Barabbas. Now, that's not unusual because, understand, Jesus was not some kind of fancy religion. It was the same name for Joshua. A lot of kids in Jesus' day were called Jesus. So here's the scene I want you to see. Pilate, trying to defuse the situation, says, "Let me find the worst guy I can find, Barabbas. Let me put him aside, Jesus. They're not that bad that they're going to pick Barabbas to be released and Jesus to be crucified." So Barabbas walks out. He said, "Who do you choose, Jesus, Barabbas, or Jesus of Nazareth?" And to his shock, they chose to release Barabbas and not Jesus. And they screamed something they didn't even believe in, for him to be crucified. So we see him continue. Let's go to the next reading. So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head and put on him a purple robe, and they said, such mockery, "Hail, King of the Jews." They struck him with their hands. Pilate then went out again and said, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you that you may know I find no fault in him." Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." I mean, this guy's been beaten and spat upon. He's been scourged. He thinks some kind of sympathy, maybe. Therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they were insistent. And they cried all the more, demanding with loud voices, saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate said, You take him and crucify him. I find no fault in you." Watch his next ploy. He tries to compromise. Because Pilate has said over and over and over again that Jesus is not guilty. He knows it, but he doesn't have the spine to rule it. And so finally, to try to placate these angry Jews, I think that's why he had Jesus scourged. "You want some blood? I'm not willing to crucify him, but I'll scourge him." Scourgings were known as a half death. They take long whips with little jagged pieces of metal and or glass, and they'd bring it around their body and jerk it, and it would pull off the skin, finally the muscles and down to the bone. It was awful. So Pilate thinks, okay, dudes, you guys want some blood? I'll give you some blood. But that doesn't satisfy him. And so finally we watch Pilate try again. From then on, Pilate, he sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend." Man, they pulled the trump card. We know historically that Pilate was already walking on thin ice with Caesar. So they said, "Man, if you don't do what we want, we're reporting you to Caesar. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus and sat down in the judgment seat in the place that's called the pavement, but in Hebrew called Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation of the Passover in about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews one more time, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" Oh gosh, this is crazy. The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." They won't walk into a Gentile's house, and now they'll claim Caesar's their king? What hypocrites. And this is a terrifying line in Scripture. And the voices of these men and the chief priests prevailed. He finally, number five, he caves the pressure. They're willing to say something no self-respecting Jew would say. Oh, we're subjects of Caesar. And then one more reading. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather the tumult was rising, man, what a coward. He took water, washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this, listen, just person. You see it. And all the people answered, oh, don't worry about it. His blood be on us and our children. So Pilate, wanting to gratify the king, the crowd, gave sentence that it should be as requested. And he released, wow, then Barabbas, the one they requested, who for rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison. Last thing Pilate tried was just to declare himself innocent. And you just go get a bowl of water, wash your hands, say, it ain't on me. I'm telling you what, there's not enough water on the face of the earth to absolve Pilate from the guilt of what he's doing. So we see this man, he's coming headfirst with Jesus. He's got to deal with Jesus. He tries every way he can to not deal with Jesus. But listen, friends, the truth of the story is we all fall in Pilate's place. Either now or one day later, you and me, we will deal with Jesus. At some point, every knee will bow. So let's just think about this for a second. Here's the question that comes to us today. What will you do with Jesus? And you can see, I mean, it's sort of crazy to me how Pilate's way to not deal with Jesus is so similar to our ways. Number one, we try just to avoid the subject. Why do some of us stay so busy? Because we don't want to have to stop long enough to look in our soul. Some of us have the ability just to block Jesus out of our mind. I would say to you, I can imagine Satan may try to block what I'm saying to you these next few minutes out of your mind. Just don't avoid it. Just avoid the issue. Don't think too much about Jesus, his claims, and his demands. Or if that doesn't work, just shift the responsibility. Oh, I know Jesus is awesome, man, but do you know the kind of family I grew up in? You know the abuse? And my parents claim to be Christians? Or do you know the church I was a part of? And when you got below the surface, how crooked it was? You expect me to follow Jesus? Or you know some of the Christian people I know? Man, I live a better life than them, and I don't even claim to be a follower of Jesus. My friends, I hear this all the time. But listen, you're going to stand before Jesus. Not your parents, not your friend, not that church that made a mess. It's going to be you. You can't shift the responsibility for someone else. Or you can't just change the subject. It's a wonder to me how uncomfortable we are. Boy, Satan has really played a great trick on us. We are so uncomfortable talking about spiritual things. We can go to lunch and we can talk about sports. We can talk about the weather. We can talk about politics. We can talk about almost anything. But you bring up the name of Jesus, and for too many of us, it's awkward. And so we just try to change the subject. Or number four, maybe this is the big one, is we compromise. Okay, buddy, I grant you. Jesus is the Son of God. Man, he's impressive every page of the book, including in this terrible, horrible trial. Man, I got you. But man, his demands are high. He wants me to surrender my life to him. He wants to be in control of my life. I'm gonna live with one foot in the world and one foot in the church, and I'm gonna try to compromise. I'll give Jesus a few Sundays a month, you know, but he's not gonna take over my life. He's not gonna take over my language. He's not gonna take over the way I do business. There are certain areas of my life that he can have. I'll start reading my Bible a little bit. I'll be a part of the church, but I'm not going to do anything in that church that makes me uncomfortable. I was talking to a brother this week who'd fallen away from the Lord, who rededicated his life this morning in first service. It was an awesome deal. And we were talking yesterday, and he said to me, he said, you know, buddy, he said, and this guy's accomplished a lot. In every other area of my life, I've had to be uncomfortable to grow. But I come to Christianity and I'm unwilling to be uncomfortable. There's something wrong with that. So guys, this compromise that you're trying to make, it didn't work for Pilate. It's not going to work for you. Or you can do like Pilate, just cave the pressure. Guys, there's so much pressure in the culture we live in to not be on fire for Jesus. And so you're a teenager and you cave to the pressure of party, and you're a college student, there's so much pressure to do things you know you shouldn't do. Or it doesn't stop when you're an adult. There's pressure at your work to act like everybody else. There's pressure in your family. There's pressure in our culture to put everything above Jesus. And it's more and more and more. Whether it's sports, or whether it's purchases, or whether it's position or power, you name it. It's too easy to cave to the pressure. Pilate did. Or you can just try. This is so lame. Just to wash your hands and declare yourself innocent. You can claim something like, I'm a good person. Bible says, no, you're not. Oh, I do more good things than I do bad things. Never outweighs. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Could you at least right now stop with me just for a moment to go, what are you doing with Jesus? And the cool thing is we get to ask and answer this question right now. We're talking about a guy dead. He didn't have any time to answer the question again. We do. Now, let's get to some good news. Let's be pretty sure. Here's my challenge. I want to challenge you to not do what Pilate did. I want to challenge you to do what this crazy little character in this story, Barabbas, did. Christian tradition, and there seems to be some evidence for it, I don't think it's locked tight, says that Barabbas later became a Christian. Can you imagine? And I can sort of just see the scene. When the crowd yells for Jesus to be crucified, I bet he's looking around like, did they not know what I did? Are these people crazy? This is a sweet, kind man over here. And so at first he's released and the freedom, like, man, I'm the one that's supposed to die and I get to go and start life over again. And tradition says Barabbas continued to watch the trials. He watched Jesus carry his cross. He saw Jesus on the cross and he thought to himself, that's where I deserve to be. So what did Barabbas do? Let me give you a few little points right here. First of all, he accepted Jesus as substitute. That's the beauty of Good Friday and Resurrection Sunday coming up, is that we will see that Jesus was our substitute. And hopefully Barabbas saw so vividly, I'm the one who did the crime. I'm the one who should have the punishment. I get set free. I get to start life all over, and Jesus is my substitute. That's the truth of the gospel. And then live your life for Jesus. If you're Barabbas, man, you think a preacher's got to jump up and down to get you to live for Jesus? I mean, dude, when you know what he's done for you, I mean, you're just living out of a thankful heart. I don't deserve this. I got a new life. And guys, if you want to get fired up for Jesus, it's not because I'm going to guilt trip you today. It's because you are just so thankful that he did take your place. And then not only that, you're going to want to tell somebody about him. Can you imagine if you're Barabbas, you think he kept his mouth shut about this story? Can you imagine him going back to his relatives, his friends, and saying, guys, you knew I was arrested, and yeah, I did it, and I was guilty, and then this pilot guy pulled this crazy deal of offering the Jewish people to kill me or kill Jesus, and they picked Jesus. And man, I'm free, and now I know him. And he couldn't have helped to tell the story. That's what's so exciting about this week to me. I know we should tell people about Jesus all the time, but this week is an incredible opportunity. Because a lot of folks will come to church on Easter that won't come any other time. But I've seen people, they come and then they start. I blew it in a text with my friend Mike Presley this week. Mike Presley texted me. He said, there's a survey, and he showed me the survey. 8 in 10 Americans say religion is losing its influence on their life. 8 in 10. And so I just quickly text back to Mike, so sad. Then Mike texts this back to me. Not so sad. The fields are ripe for harvest. It says religion is losing its influence. Christ said, my word will not return void. I stand corrected, okay? Guys, we can see the world going on, going crazy, and we got the answer. And so we get to share it. But before you share it, I want to ask you that question just one more time. What will you do with Jesus? What are you doing with Jesus? I mean, if you completely surrendered your life to him, are you trying one of those tactics, you know, I'm sort of like, I'm sort of not, man, I got these excuses because of what other people have done, or, you know, so many Christians are hypocrites, you know. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Just expose that. Here's what I challenge you to do. Try that excuse out on Jesus. Because one day you're going to have to. So what are you doing? And today, man, if today's the day for you to surrender to Jesus, it will be the best day of your life. Because, my friends, you're like the captain of the ship. You're hearing the words, I am the lighthouse. Change course. And my friends, Jesus is not moving. He is the King of Kings, and he's the Lord of Lords. Instead of you trying to make Jesus work around your life, you better and I better start working my life around Jesus. And you could leave here with the freedom and the forgiveness and the new life that Barabbas had. So if you need to come to Jesus or you need to rededicate your life to Jesus, man, we got this front row open. It could happen today while we stand together and sing.